It's like what Barbara said so eloquently in Hello, Dolly, even though she was years too young for the part. Money is like manure. It isn't worth a thing unless you spread it around, encouraging things to grow. You know what I mean?
You're listening to the Still Queer as Folk podcast. Each week, we take down an episode of Showtime's Queer as Folk TV show to find out if it still holds up 17 years later. I'm Patrick Randall.
And I'm Matt Dominguez.
This episode is called French Fried.
At first.
Do we need to do that again?
No, let's keep going because it's just funny. French Fried first aired in the U.S. on April 8th, 2001 and worldwide on April 23rd, 2001.
It was directed by Jeremy Potisois. This is his first of four Queer as Folk episodes. He would later direct such hits as The L Word, five episodes of 6 Feet Under, eight episodes of The Tudors, starring Jonathan Rhys-Meyers. Thank you.
Nice plug.
Homeland, two episodes of the Aaron Sorkin show, The Newsroom, which I loved, seven episodes of Boardwalk Empire, and wait for it, six episodes of Game of Thrones.
He's a three-time Emmy nominee, too.
This is quite a director, doing a Queer as Folk episode in 2001.
And it was written by a veteran Queer as Folk writer, Jason Schaefer.
We've liked his stuff so far, so I'm optimistic about this episode.
looks like the IMDb synopsis was completely lifted from Showtime, so they're one and the same this time. Michael and Dr. David disagree about finances. A strange Frenchman moves in with Lindsay and Gus, causing a stir, and Justin is suspended.
The theme that I picked up on this episode is, quite simply, money. How it impacts relationships, both for good and bad, and the way it pulls people together. That was the only thing that I could see that was tying this whole episode together.
I saw a lot about reconciliation. I think in terms of what goes on between Mel and Lindsay throughout this episode and with Michael and Dr. David Cameron as well. But money is definitely a huge factor as we open the show.
This was a really nice opening. It had that split screen thing that we like, only this time it was in motion.
So yeah, it's just popping in and out.
Yeah, nice little montage of scenes. And the first one is Michael and David wrestling in the snow in the park and building a pornographic snowman.
Kinky.
Then there's lots of shots of David always paying for Michael, and it was kind of funny because when I first watched it, I was thinking, oh, that's so nice. Oh, who wouldn't want to be in that situation? It was just so well shot that in the first 90 seconds, there's this complete buildup to the theme of Michael dating a rich doctor. That was all delivered to us, so it had a really good way to set the stage for what we're going to see for the next 40 minutes.
And, you know, the way I described it, it almost felt like it was like a honeymoon that we were watching.
Yeah.
Because they just seemed to be so happy doing all the things that they were doing.
A vaguely Parisian song in the background. Right.
But it always ended with, at first, oh, David's getting the check on this one. Oh, that's fine. You know, great. He's going to treat us this time. But then it's like everything, like to getting the cab, everything piling up. And I like that it finally kind of came to a head with Michael going like, need you to stop.
Yeah.
Paying for me. And I mean, in a relationship, money is always a sensitive subject, especially in their relationship since they're living together.
I did like that Michael was naive enough to think that $300 a month for house expenses would cover all of Dr. David's architecturally perfect mid-century modern home, complete with a maid.
Well, and he mentions that. He's like, are you sure this is enough with this and this and this? And Dr. David Cameron deflected with like, ah, the cake, that amazing chocolate cake that came in.
Death by chocolate,
I think. But I will say, this is a point, and you know me, I'm a Dr. David Cameron fan, but there was one moment.
I can afford it, you can. What's the big deal?
It's a big deal to me.
Whoa.
Well, I don't know. I think that's reasonable to bring up, isn't it?
It's not that he can't afford it. It's that there's never an opportunity for Michael to say, I can get this one. Michael has a budget, I'm sure. As we see, he
Mr. Keeps, Manager.
He keeps wonderful transactions in his checkbook. So he obviously tracks his finances fine. So if he can say, hey, I can pay for this cab ride.
Yeah, Dr. Yeah. David was a little insistent at all turns that he covers it. This is something that I've kind of worked with for a while. And I've often... Are you snickering at me?
A little.
I just used a My Fair Lady term, snickering.
Tell her I'm the chap who was snickering at her.
So I've seen this before, and I've started to find that I think it's less about the dollars and more about the presence of one another. It doesn't so much matter if it's $100 or $10. If the presence of both people is equal, then it doesn't so much matter who paid $100 or who paid $10. I like that they made it an issue for this episode, though.
And then we check on Mel, who is partying it up at Babylon for Dyke Night.
Oh, this the intro to the scene was hilarious. It's funny because in the last episode, The Ties That Bind, it was Bondage Night. It was the leather ball, I believe.
Yes.
I missed the double entendre in that episode title, The Ties That Bind, because it was about the familial relationships between the dads and sons.
But it was also about bondage.
And about Ted being tied up. I don't know how I missed that last episode.
But yeah, we're treated to many shots of women this time at Babylon dancing it up. And
did you hear the song that was playing? That was Jerry Halliwell.
It was Ginger Spice. Oh, I was a big fan of that.
Boots are made for walking. We're sorry if you listened to it streaming, you heard something else. You missed the Spice Girl.
You missed out on a great cover. And it's Melanie is looking at the crowd, and she's there with Emmett and Ted.
I liked how Emmett and Ted were like the only guys in view there.
Right. The thing that bugged me, though, is like, yes, they may be the only men there, but they felt like it was such an infringement on maybe what they thought was their space, because they were making a lot of comments. Like when there were two women who were dancing with each other, and it looks like they were very close. They were sort of grinding on each other.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Emmett had that line.
I think, was it Emmett or Ted who described it as a muncher mash?
Well, I was talking about the line where Emmett says, ew, what are they doing?
That, and then Ted describes it as a muncher mash. And I'm like...
I thought it was funny.
But what it does for me, though, it harkens to a constant problem with gay men, which is this misogyny that exists within the gay male community whenever there are queer women that are in the same space. That, like, we have to be grossed out by women in some way, or just because women are also sexual, that is somehow abhorrent to a gay man. And I'm like, no, women are sexual creatures too. And we are also part of the same community. And we need to acknowledge that that has been a problem. And so the way it was treated with casually here doesn't help this episode's relevance today.
It's something interesting about that, though, is the smaller the town, the more likely they are to commingle. So in, say, a small town of maybe couple hundred thousand people, there's likely to be maybe one or two gay bars, and they're very mixed. You have gay, lesbian, and everything else all in the one bar. The bigger the city, the more niche it becomes and the more focused the clientele become. So I think it does breed a little bit of contempt when certain segments get accustomed to having their space. But you know, even in here in Chicago where we record, there's several places that are very mixed. And then there's quite a few other places that are not at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then some you're likely to be chased out of in the wrong circumstances. So I like that it was brought up in this episode because it sparked a discussion that we're having about it. And this was 2001 where, I don't know, maybe it was a little more segregated in terms of gay men and lesbian women at the time. But I do think that it's has more to do with like the size of the community and the available spaces to go.
With that, I do appreciate that Emmett and Ted were...
They were supporting their girl.
Yeah, they were supporting Mel, trying to get her out since she seems to be single now. You know, she can't help but think of Lindsay.
Yeah, I thought some of those lines that she had were a little strange, where she says that she thought she'd be with Lindsay forever, but she cheated on her. She moved out. Lindsay didn't want her to go. So there's a little bit of self-inflicted wound here. And I don't know, she kind of got what she is asking for, if you ask me.
She made a comment where she's like, the fuck she got ended up fucking her over or something like that. And it's like, yeah, But she recognized her fault, and she's harboring the desire that there can be a reconciliation. Maybe she feels that because once you cheated, there's no chance of that. But yeah. Then she is encouraged by Emmett and Ted, because it's very clear that she is very much in love with Lindsay. And Emmett and Ted tell her that she needs to go and tell Lindsay these things.
Yeah, and I was kind of disappointed that scene ended there, because I would have loved to have seen Emmett and Ted do a little bit more on Dyke Knight in Babylon. I mean, is the back group open for Dyke Knight?
I would think so. I mean, hey,
so
they got to get theirs too.
The next morning, Brian is driving his young ward, Justin, to school in the Jeep.
Justin makes a comment about how he drinks too much coffee. Justin, that is not a thing.
You drink too much coffee. This isn't coffee, it's latte. It's just coffee that costs $5. And it still causes high blood pressure, heart attack, poor sexual performance. If it had any complaints, not to mention insomnia.
Hey, he makes some good points.
There is no such thing as too much coffee in this world.
Well, yeah, probably for Brian, because you'd think that Brian would go for something a little stronger in the morning. A couple episodes.
He goes for a latte.
And he wanted guava juice.
Yeah, so he goes for a latte. And I do like that Justin said that's a coffee that just costs $5. And I'm like,
it's coffee with milk in it. Come on.
Yeah, it's true.
We find out that Justin's a smarty pants, though, in this Jeep ride to school.
Yes.
I liked how Justin's all dressed up in his little schoolboy outfit. It had this kind of vague fetish type of feel to
you
it.
You know that Brian makes him wear that thing sometimes, and it's odd.
So Justin's talking about how well he did on the SAT and the colleges that he's been admitted to.
Was he admitted into these schools, or is he just applying to these schools?
Oh, maybe he's just applied.
Yeah, like he was applying to like a lot of big schools like Dartmouth, Brown.
Yeah, hits all the Ivy League. Then Brian has this really cute moment where he's startled that Justin's applying to out-of-state universities.
I applied to Dartmouth, Brown.
You're going out of state?
What, do you give a shit?
It's just the first I've heard of it, that's all.
You do. You give a shit.
And Justin's like, what do you care? And Justin feels like it's sort of a gotcha moment. And
yeah,
he starts teasing
it.
Brian.
I loved it. This is one of the first couple of times where we start to see that there's a real connection developing between the two.
Mm.
And I like how they drop in, the writers drop in these little pieces that are little breadcrumbs leading us towards it. We finally see Daphne. We haven't seen her in a couple episodes.
Yeah, last time we saw her, she was studying at the diner, and now she's back at school, and it looks like she aced the verbal portion of the SATs.
Go Daphne.
Yes, go Daphne. But they're going into class, and Chris Hobbs is being a douchebag, and Justin, you know, stands up to the kid, and they kind of get into a little bit of a scuffle, and the teacher walks in.
Mr. Dixon.
What an ironic name.
Well, we had Dale Wexler in the last episode.
Mr. Dixon threatens Justin as part of causing trouble, and Daphne quickly, you know, kind of comes to the rescue. But this allows us to be introduced to Mr. Dixon's own homophobia and bigotry.
This classroom scene had a little bit of a Degrassi feel to it, where all the students are calling the teacher sir. Step out to the foyer.
You know, they're going through. Justin gets picked on again by Chris Hobbs, and he calls out the teacher and says, aren't you going to do anything about him calling me queer?
Excuse me, Mr. Dixon.
What is it, Taylor?
Chris just called me queer.
I didn't hear anything.
How could you not hear it? Everybody heard that.
Sit down, Taylor.
That sets Justin off, and he totally lights up the teacher.
Well, listen up now that your hearing has returned. This queer says, fuck you.
Oh, I was snapping along and just like screaming, you go, Justin, you tell that motherfucker out. I was living for it. Yeah, that teacher, of course, because, you know, you can't really do that even in a private school. This action gets Justin suspended from school.
Meanwhile, Brian, who apparently doesn't have to work that day, and Michael doesn't have to work, so they go to the bank to figure out why Michael apparently has some money in his account that he can't figure out why. This is another Michael as the buffoon moment.
Why is he a buffoon?
He can't figure out that checks haven't been cashed into his account, and that's why he has extra money. He has to go to the bank and ask a teller.
Well, he went to the bank because he assumes that Dr. David Cameron cashed these checks. So what do you do when you want to look at a discrepancy? You're going to go to a teller, especially in 2001.
Oh, good point. I would go online, look at my statement.
Right. In 2017, yes, we would look at that now, but it's 2001. And
Matt, do you know how to balance a checkbook?
I did a long time ago, but since the advent of online banking, I have not balanced my checkbook in I don't know how many years.
I just thought it was weird that Michael couldn't figure this out. I did like that the bank was offering free laser hair removal when you open a new account.
That was an odd perk to me. But then I realized maybe this bank is just off of Liberty Avenue.
It's the gay bank.
Yeah, it's the gay bank.
First kinda gay like a, national.
Right. And of course, Brian is hitting on the teller.
We do find out that Michael waxes. He doesn't get laser.
Hi, I'm Paul. If you open up a money market account with us today, you'll get a $50 gift certificate for laser hair removal.
Thanks, I wax.
Wax is what?
And I was like, oh, yeah, first of all, we've seen him naked most of the time. Like, yeah. Is he like, what, is it the back? Is it
the buttocks?
The mons pubis? Like, what's going on there? I think I just broke Patrick.
Oh, this is not Degrassi anymore.
Brian, of course, is hitting on the teller. Because
the teller was hot.
The teller was hot. I'm not going to argue that point. But, you know, again, Brian is ready to fuck anything that moves.
Yeah, I like just how almost creepy he got towards the teller.
Oh, he was like all up in his business and like very clearly like he writes down his phone number and not his account number.
Check my balance.
And I'm like, geez, like you're not even being charming. You're just being squirmy about it. And yet the teller will still obviously has sex with him.
So Michael finds out that Dr. David has not been cashing any of his checks, which I think is a flaw in Dr. David's logic. How did he expect to get away with that for any length of time? Did he think that Michael wouldn't say anything? This could have provoked a marital fight in the architecturally perfect mid-century modern house because Dr. David would have been deliberately leaving money in Michael's account. Michael would have been spending it. It could have been like total disaster. So this part of the storyline I thought was a little weak.
I think if there had been a conversation saying like, here, you can give me these checks, but I'm not going to cash them, you know, or just right. Like that would just kind of be an upfront going like, I will hold on to these as a gesture that you are doing this, but know that I don't, because clearly Dr. David Cameron doesn't need the money.
Well,
to cover the expenses.
It was about $1,000. So that's like 3.5 months worth of expenses. They didn't have a conversation about this until this moment. So weak storyline there, I think.
The math doesn't add up because I don't think 3 months have passed. Yeah. Maybe it's back rent that he's paying or back pay, and that's why it's $1,000?
Could be. Or maybe this was just a plot device to kind of fast forward because all of a sudden everything is like snow covered in Pittsburgh. So
well, no, they were rolling around in the snow at the top of the episode.
But the episode before for the leather event, I don't think we ever saw any snow. I don't even think we saw an exterior shot in that episode.
No, we just saw a lot of people's exteriors.
Yeah, yes, we did. Speaking of exteriors, we have a nice shot of Melanie showing up at the lesbian home. And there's this nice editing here where Melanie is living out this alternate reality scene of, well, I'll call lesbian bliss. When she comes up to the door, Lindsay answers, they make up, they miss each other, and then boom. A Frenchman named Guillaume opens the door.
Oui.
Oui?
Non. Oui. As in, is there something you would like?
Actually, yes. I'd like to see Lindsay.
Ah, Lindsay is not here right now. She's teaching class.
And who are you?
I am Guillaume. And you are?
Melanie.
Ah, Melanie, the ex-girlfriend.
You know who I am.
You're the one who had the affair.
Oh my gosh. Like I literally wrote down, who the hell is this? Because, yeah, and I loved that alternate reality. Because, like, it was one of the things, like, oh, maybe this is really happening. But then the way they angled the camera doing those Dutch angles very clearly, I was like, oh, she's very much fantasizing that this is how it's going to go when she, you know, rings the doorbell and Lindsay opens the door. But, yeah, to have this stranger that, you know, opened the door, who obviously knows who Mel is.
And then just sends her away.
Just with her child let her in the house. I mean, yeah. I would be like, no, that is not how this is happening.
I like that scene. It was just a surprise.
And it's like, what does Mel do? But we immediately cut to the locker room.
She runs right to the gym.
She goes right to the gym. Everyone is changing, even some of our main stars.
We had full frontal Peter Page nudity in this scene.
Here for it.
Yes.
It was like, he is naked, isn't he? And Mel busts in and everyone, even all of our extras in the locker room, freak out a little. And Emmett stands on one of the benches to make the announcement as the town crier that, don't worry, she's a lesbian.
Do you think I've never seen a dick before?
Not mine.
It's okay. It's okay, everyone.
She's a lesbian.
Oh, she's a dyke.
You hear an extra in the background say, oh, she's a dyke.
I'm so glad that got picked up.
I thought this was stupid. The overreaction of the gay boys didn't make any sense to me. It's like, gay boys are always getting naked in front of their girlfriends. Always.
Disagree. I certainly don't.
So you don't, but lots of others do. I have Instagram. I don't think, okay.
I'm sorry, especially when it's, well, you're saying people get naked in front of their girlfriends, sure, but a strange woman just bursts in, like, I'm sorry, I have some sense of propriety.
But why would a gay man care if a woman sees him naked? I just thought it was an overreaction because they all, like, flipped out and ran for towels.
For the drama, it worked.
The comedy was good. I just thought it was just unbelievable.
But it was a shtick. I mean, I don't know really believability was something they were going for.
At the gym that I go to, there is a cleaning woman that comes through the locker room all the time. Thank you.
And so she has this conversation saying, like, I went over there and this is what happened. She called him a frog.
Yeah. And then Brian, of course, whips out the cell phone. No cell phone in locker room, remember? That this is probably before cell phones had cameras on them.
Oh, right. He had a phone. He had a phone.
Yeah. They calls, whips on a speakerphone, and we hear Guillaume delivering the message.
Oh, and that was the hokiest voicemail message I had ever heard.
Yeah.
The sweet baby Gus. And I'm like, ugh.
There's another scene right now that's happening over at Debbie's house where Justin, having been suspended from school, is up in bed drawing. And one funny thing about the set that I noticed here is that it's still decked out with preteen wallpaper. So Michael was, like, living in this room until, like, 18, 19, 20-ish or so.
This really explains his stunted growth as an adult. He was still living in a child's room.
Yeah, that's an interesting play on it. And there's Justin not quite sure what to do after being more or less gay-bashed verbally at school, so...
And not just by Chris Hobbs, but by his teacher.
Yeah.
His teacher was definitely a part of it. And so who is the person that you can trust or go to? And I wrote down, I want my Jennifer Taylor. You would think that after your student has been suspended, you would get a call from the school saying, hi, your son and or daughter has been suspended from school. And she would come rushing in saying, like, whoa, what?
Yeah, she was mysteriously absent from this.
I find that an odd plot hole and a missed opportunity to bring Jennifer Taylor back into the story.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that. Maybe Sherry Miller was not available that day.
Maybe she was booked that day, but can you imagine the scene that could have happened between her and that teacher?
Yeah, we do see some good Jennifer Taylor and teacher stuff later. Not yet, though. Mm. Jennifer Taylor is MIA at the moment. So there's a quick scene in the diner where Michael is basically discovering that he's Dr. David's, and this is Dr. David's words, boy toy.
I didn't cash your checks because I don't need your money.
But I need to give it to you.
Michael, you know, of course, that half the monthly expenses aren't really $300.
Of course I know, and I'm sure whatever it is, I couldn't afford it, but that's not the point. I want to contribute as much as I can.
And you do? You do. You give me something much more valuable than money. You give me your sweetness, your charm, your humor, your hot little bod. I mean, what's paying half the gas and electric compared to that, Mike?
Not some boy toy you're keeping.
I liked that it was starting to dawn on Michael. Dr. David was trying to talk his way around it, and eventually they just agreed that they're only going to do things that they can both afford to do together, which makes no sense.
I think it is nice to see that they are compromising, though.
But I think it's a hollow compromise because, well, maybe not, because Dr. David is dining at the diner versus the place where he ordered the 61 Petrus.
Or that awesome chocolate cake.
Yeah.
Earlier in this episode.
So they're already compromising, but I like that there's this discussion of the money. I just thought that it was a little stilted and not quite as meaty as I'd want that particular discussion to be. So they agree. They're only going to do what they can both afford, except going to Paris for a week. I mean, Dr. David just kind of dangles that there like, well, I wasn't going to bring this up, but you know.
Yeah, and this is sort of the second time that Dr. David Cameron has done or purchased something for Michael without really giving any hint towards that, hi, I've made this rather indulgent purchase for you.
What was the first one?
I'm thinking of the watch he gave Michael for his birthday that was had like some sort of engraving.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, a trip to Paris for two, first class, for 2001 even was probably expensive.
And a suite, eating in the finest restaurants in the world.
Yes.
That was just like super cliche.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was sort of like the most romantic version of Paris you could possibly think of.
Right.
And I'm like, I doubt Paris is like that all the time.
It's not. And there is a thing called the Paris syndrome that often affects certain tourists that go there expecting to see the romantic version of Paris. But instead, they find a major metropolis that is not unlike any other major metropolis with crime, litter, graffiti, thieves everywhere.
And bunch of people.
Yeah. And they go into a kind of a catatonic state when they experience Paris. I kid you not, Matt. It is called the Paris syndrome.
I love that.
Let's go experience the Paris syndrome ourselves. But first, let's stop by. Yeah. Boy toy.
I can be a boy toy. It's fine.
But Michael can't.
That's his problem. That's a Michael problem. That's not a Matt problem. I will be happily to be a boy toy.
Okay. Let's talk about that as we get deeper into the episode awesome. And talk about Michael's response to all this. So let's stop by the lesbian home where everybody that was in the gym stops by.
Hi, Lindsay. Hope you don't mind us all dropping by like this.
Actually, you could have called.
We did, and got your message.
Yeah, it seems like this entire group is not having it.
Right. They're going over there in a show of force. So we've got Brian, Ted, Emmett, and Melanie. Emmett throws this shady look at Lindsay as he walks in the door after they just kind of push in.
Yeah, there was no discussion of like, because even Lindsay says like, oh, yeah, you should have called.
Yeah, and then they just walk in. And I love that Emmett was just like, I don't approve of this. I kind of felt for Melanie in this scene. Normally, Melanie comes across as not entirely likable when she's all riled up. But here, I kind of felt for her because she sees Lindsay in the situation with Guillaume. And there's somebody else living in the house, like her house, that she's, as we find out, is paying all the bills for. Here's this guy that has just shown up there. And nobody knows who he is. Nothing was discussed. So I sympathized with her.
I think as well you should have, because clearly there are decisions happening without Melanie's knowledge. Now, granted, Lindsay sort of throws that in Mel's face. Mel says, you never ever mentioned this person. She's like, well, I had, but you never listened. And I was like,
right.
Oh. Ouch.
There was some funny moments in this scene before it cuts away where Emin and Ted are going to go have the rabbit stew that Guillaume made.
Yes. And you can hear them in the background. It's just, it's the best rabbit stew they ever had.
Yeah, they both love it. And very, very quietly, you hear Emmett say to Ted,
you're not going to raise rabbits in your condo.
So it was like, Ted must have liked it so much that he wanted to like start raising rabbits to slaughter and make his own French lapin stew.
We're also treated to what is now a very dated concept that Lindsay and and Guillaume are going to be married.
Yeah.
in a marriage of convenience.
I haven't used a UK chip in a while, but this scene or this storyline did play out in the UK episode as well. I think it was better too.
Of course it was. Lindsay, you know, lays it out that he needs his green card and apparently Gus has taken to Guillaume really well. And so yeah, they figured it's going to work out for both of them if they just do this. But obviously, I mean, Mel is clearly taken aback by this.
There was a cute little moment where when they're first pushing into the house where Brian just takes Gus away from Guillaume. I liked his confidence and he knew his place. He knew exactly what was going on, even if he didn't know who Guillaume was, and he was just saying, give me my kid. I like that.
Well, with this news,
after eating the rabbit,
they head to Woody's. in another rare instance, we see, oh wow, another person of color in this show.
Yeah, Brian was all about him too. I liked that they worked that in. I wish we would have seen Brian leave with him.
Yeah, give us something. But like also, right, I just didn't want it to be like a token kind of thing.
This scene didn't have much going on. It was really just this bridge. And
yeah, only to let us know that, you know, with because Justin comes in and reveals that he's been suspended. They're all recounting experiences they've had with bullies in high school. They treat it with such nostalgia.
Yeah, I like Brian's story when, I don't know if I liked it. I thought the writing was clever.
Once this straight football jock picked me up and dunked my head in the toilet.
What did you do?
I followed him to his locker. It was open, his hand was up, kind of like this. He was laughing. So I slammed the door so hard it broke three of his fingers. And that was the end of the season for him.
That's like assault at that point. But I did like that we have this backstory to Brian that goes back years where he was not taking any of this homophobia from anybody. He was fighting back at a very early age, as we see Justin doing now. So I like the tie-in there.
That's probably what got Justin into Brian's bed that night. That shared bond of
beating people up and being gay-bashed.
Yes, beating down the homophobes.
So back to Brian's loft. It's naked time with Justin. Blue light again.
The blue light.
Justin
special.
Is trying to get Brian's attention to figure out how to market his agenda to the rest of St. James Academy. So he finally gets Brian to go into full-on advertising executive mode.
Yes, he becomes his own personal Don Draper and trying to figure out how he can market people to join a gay-straight alliance at his school.
So you have this concept, the gay-straight student alliance. Let's all live together. Power to the people. Peace. That's boring as shit.
I could take out an Uzi and shoot everyone. That would be exciting.
Well, at least you get their attention. Now we have to figure out a way to sell it.
Right. How?
Same way you sell everything else. Sex.
Sex.
You want to get them in the tent? Hand out these.
Condoms.
You said it was an alliance.
This scene was blocked really well because Brian kept walking in front of the camera while he's talking to Justin, and he's naked, so there's all these shots of Brian's butt that just keeps showing up.
Stellar blocking.
Very nice. Stellar. Very nice.
And
Brian comes up with the revolutionary concept of the gay straight alliance condom giveaway in order to get people to show up.
Yes, revolutionary. Let's give a bunch of horny teenagers condoms in order to entice them to come to a meeting. I'm like, oh, you're an ad exec. You're the top seller, Brian. Good
condoms
for you.
In schools used to be, I don't know, it still is, but it used to be like this huge thing where people were like protesting it. In 2001, this had to have been super edgy, possibly even illegal in some jurisdictions.
Is this school a private religious school?
Yeah, St. James Academy. Yeah,
so like for that school, sure. Public school, I mean, they're throwing them at you.
I think it's implied that it's a Catholic school.
Because it's St. James, right?
Or right.
That, yeah, that makes sense.
So Brian and Justin, while naked, plan to give away condoms at school. So the next morning, we're at the diner with Michael, Ted, and Emmett. They start to take Michael down the path of actually accepting David's offer to go to Paris with him. Emmett had this great line where he said,
"Then stop being so goddamn selfish."
Selfish?
I think it's selfish to deny your lover pleasure.
And I thought that was interesting to say when it came to something like money. But they made a good case for this would make Dr. David as happy as it would make Michael.
And it wasn't necessarily that it's Dr. David Cameron spending the money on Michael. It's more that he's showing that he is taking care of Michael.
Mm.
And that's where Dr. David Cameron is deriving his pleasure, is that he is caring for his partner. That just, I mean, he's a doctor. He cares for people. And so in this instance, while this particular episode is exploring it through a monetary lens, it's more about the care that he is putting towards Michael. And that's what Emma is trying to impose on Michael, is that this isn't just like, oh, he's richer than you, let him spend his money. It's that Dr. David Cameron gets what he wants out of the relationship by being able to provide this for you. He wants to be the provider.
Yeah, and Dr. David can clearly afford this trip, and he can clearly afford to bring Michael with him. Michael just needs to kind of get okay with the notion that somebody else can momentarily be responsible for his happiness and not think that he has to contribute like dollar for dollar or anything like that. Ted suddenly has all these wise quotes in there. And I love it how Ted is alternately an idiot and like the wisest friend there. It's like we talked about a couple episodes ago, how Ted always has these well thought out researched zingers that he can drop in from time to time. But then there's other situations where he's just flummoxed. I love how that character is written.
Yeah. And I also, as the theater person I am, enjoyed Emmett's impression of Miss Barbara.
It's like what Barbara said so eloquently in Hello, Dolly. Even though she was years too young for the part. Money is like manure. It isn't worth a thing unless you spread it around, encouraging things to grow. You know what I mean? Kiss me, Horace.
And he was not wrong. She was entirely too young for the part in the movie. And does a great impression. Know what I mean? It was great.
Let's check in with Justin's Gay Straight Alliance condom giveaway sweepstakes.
Right, so he is obviously unsuspended and is back.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I guess the suspension was only for a couple of days.
Well, yeah.
And he is back.
Tell the teacher to fuck off. You only get one day off.
Yeah. And he's trying to entice people with these condoms. And at one point, he's saying that, like, there's a meeting. And then at another point, he's just like, you want a condom? And then points out the meeting to get people to go. And it looks like it's working. But then Chris Hobbs shows up.
Oh, that was a super scary scene.
Because Justin, you know, he says, Chris Hobbs makes a joke about butt fucking. And Justin throws right in his face, no, just hand jobs. And then the flashback to one of the hottest sex scenes in the show of Chris Hobbs getting the hand job from Justin, which I am so happy was brought up again because it has not been discussed since. I was like, oh, and the cutaway to it, and then it's cutting back to Chris Hobbs just
he was
manhandling heaving. Justin, which was like simultaneously scary and maybe just a little erotic.
I thought it was terrifying because he's almost nose to nose with him. He's huffing and puffing at him. I thought it was truly scary to see Chris Hobbs in that state, and it sets itself up for the future.
Right. And so there's this moment of danger, but
yeah, Justin gets over it almost immediately.
Yeah. Because okay. he's gaining this confidence that he can overpower, not physically, but in a game of wit, you know, against Chris Hobbs, which I think is probably pretty simple. So we're at the meeting, and we're seeing who showed up.
Debbie shows up.
Debbie Novotny shows up with cookies. Bless her heart.
How ironic. She knows where the school is. She makes some cookies. She rearranges her schedule at the diner so that she can show up at St. James Academy, waltzes right into the building, finds the room and says, oh, I mean, here I am with cookies.
Yeah, what does she have to stop by, like, security, like, check-in? Yeah. Like, hi, I'm so-and-so, I'm here for this. But I guess not at St. James. And I guess there was one student that made a comment about, like, isn't this supposed to be about sex?
Yeah, the intro to the Gay Straight Alliance lasted, like, 20 seconds before that little yappy girl says, isn't this supposed to be, like, sex? Or was that one of the yappy guys?
But I think it was one of the girls.
Justin starts to answer it, but I don't know where that line came from. It's like, who in their right mind thinks that the gay straight alliance is about getting together to fuck? I mean, it's not like arranging a group. It's so the line was just sort of stupid that it was in there.
Well, I mean, they probably just made the connection of the condoms they were handing out. So they assumed,
what did they expect was going to go on in that classroom?
I think maybe it was a secret meeting of what could happen later that night. I don't know. But Justin makes a very strong point off the bat of like, here are all the things I've been called.
Faggot, cocksucker, homo, fudge packer. Those are a few of the names that I have been called because I'm gay.
He owned that room.
Yeah, and it was really fantastic. And it's like I'm seeing little activist Justins, you know, appearing, right. And it's really great.
But meanwhile, Mr. Dixon shows up.
Dixon.
The teacher that Justin had previously told to fuck off and got him suspended. He opens the door, bursts in. And breaks the thing up, and there's this nice back and forth with Debbie being like, who the fuck are you?
Who the fuck are you? Yeah. And, you know, he presents one of the condoms that Justin had been handing out and saying, like, is this part of your curriculum? And I love that Debbie doubles down on it, mm-hmm. and says, you bet your ass it is. And I was like, yes, save sex.
There's something I caught in the scene after it's broken up and everybody's leaving the room. You see a shot of Chris Hobbs lurking in the hallway. Mm-hmm. So he had clearly went and
got his.
And I think he's identifying with Mr. Dixon. You know, Mr. Dixon hates the queers. Chris Hobbs hates the queers, even though he got the handy from Justin a little while.
And seemed to really enjoy it.
Yeah. That was like a 20-second jerk off.
Yeah.
That's all it took him. Oh, that was a great scene.
Yes. Yeah, so the tension continues to build between those two because Justin is not backing down, even with all the tactics that Chris Hobbs is employing.
So into the park with Lindsay and Brian, they're going for a walk. This park looked like it had just had a blizzard in it. It was just snow as far as the eye could see. And this reminded me of something that I think Queer as Folk kind of missed the boat on something by shooting the series in the fall, winter, and spring. They never shot in the summer. If you see any kind of gay show these days, it's always in the summer and everybody's half naked. Queer as Folk never had that. It was always in the colder seasons.
Does Pittsburgh ever have like a warm season?
Oh, sure. This scene I thought looked old. It almost looked like it was shot on Super 8 film or something like that. It just had this feel to it that made it look like 70s or 80s kind of sitcom thing. We find a little bit about the history of Brian and Melanie.
Did I just hear you say Mel and I? Did you actually say that? Years I have struggled to get Mel and you to be civil to each other, to even be in the same room together. Now all of a sudden, Mel and you are allies?
It's all pretty hollow sounding, though. We hear all these things about how this animosity between the two of them goes back years. We just don't get enough backstory. We're always just told that they hate each other. They're very quick to say what he did to us, everything that he's done to us. You tried to break us up over years, etc. I just can't track with that storyline very well because it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, we see the same behavior that he had at the beginning with Michael and Dr. David Cameron. We got to see that in action. And I think that's also why like Mel and Dr. David Cameron were able to bond as quickly as they did.
So you think that Lindsay is kind of a female Michael?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Absolutely. Like from the beginning.
But I don't know why. Why would Brian have that type of person, like a lesbian? I can see where
he felt close enough to her to be like, yes, I'll give you my sperm and we will have a child. Clearly, they have some sort of history the way Brian and Michael have a history.
Except for Brian never gave Michael his sperm.
Right. But then again, he never, you know, gave semi-oral pleasure to Lindsay.
Yeah, I think later in the series, we do find out that they had like an encounter, but I think that's a couple seasons away, so I won't spoil it. This scene wraps up really well where Lindsay just tells Brian to fuck off.
Well, I don't have time to worry about what my selfish, self-centered, narcissistic friends think. I have to think about my son and how I'm going to raise and support him. I have to think about what's best for him. So I think you should just fuck off. I'm sure that's a thought you can understand.
I like that because heretofore, Lindsay was always almost Brian's apologist for everything.
Yep.
And she had finally had enough of whatever was irking her and told him to fuck off and then rolled Gus away through the snow. So Dr. David and Michael are in bed. Michael is studying his Paris guidebook, which he quickly hides when David comes into the room. And they talk about how Dr. David just wants to make Michael happy. And it was this aw moment.
What's wrong with that? Is there anything wrong with that?
No, I thought it was, aw. I wrote in my notes, actually, daw, not daw. Aw. I still think that Dr. David's sounding a little bit like a sugar daddy. I think his phrasing could have been differently about this trip, but okay. There's this great song that's underneath the scene as they start to do the things that a older man and a younger man do in bed together whilst naked and talking about going to Paris.
Sex?
Yeah. And so the song was Straight to Number One by Touch and Go. We hear that song many times in this series. It was nice that they introduced this. And it made me think that, I don't know, is that there's any song that's directly associated with the different characters. You know, like a lot of episodes will have a theme song for each character or each scene that they play every time. We get something different every time. And this was a good song to be using for the sex scene between David and Michael. I wish that they had more music cues around this, though.
I like that they're trying to explore what their dynamic is as a couple. Even though he is the richer, older man, that Michael can allow him to feel like he can be taken care of, and that doesn't make him any less of a man, or that he's not contributing anything else to the relationship. So, yeah, it was a cute nice scene. It was a cute scene.
Meanwhile, at the Franco lesbian home, Guillaume and Lindsay are basically acting out the entire movie Green Card with Gerard Depardieu.
There's a lot of French. A lot of French in this episode.
Is Guillaume gay?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Because what they're doing is, in this scene, they're like trying to create a history together.
Yeah.
And Guillaume makes a comment about Brian's smile in a picture. So yeah, he's one of us.
Brian, he's very beautiful.
Lots of guys would agree with you.
Especially his lips. They're quite kissable, yes?
No.
I don't think that we ever see an overt moment with them yet, but I kind of wish we would. I wish that Brian would have just like fucked the shit out of Guillaume someplace. And that's how they got him out of the way. Brian just fucked him right out of
Brian fucks his way out of any situation.
Exactly. So why couldn't it have been him?
Yeah.
Melanie arrives in the middle of this, and there's this cute little, oh, I miss you moment. I started to get a little misty-eyed over the broken up lesbians.
Oh my God. You have a heart, Patrick?
Believe it or not. Over at Dr. David's architecturally perfect mid-century modern house, we find out that Michael has a video camera.
Top of the line.
David likes to go for the high end.
And Michael is in a new jacket that's boss.
That reminded me of his first date with Dr. David, where he borrowed Brian's Hugo Boss jacket. Now he's got his own.
And did you see? And it's so funny that you bring that up, because when Brian looked at the label and saw that it was Boss, and he's like, let's go to Woody's. Like, he was done in that moment.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, it's a nice little subtle callback to a previous episode and an action that somewhat sticks in Brian's craw just a little. And I enjoyed that.
Do you think it was weird that this was the first time that they've apparently been to the architecturally perfect mid-century modern house owned by Dr. David, chiropractor to the Penguins?
Yes.
Why? Because we're led to believe that this is like way out in suburbia. So would they all just get into the Jeep and drive out to see Michael's video camera, or what were they doing there?
I mean, were they not leaving soon? Were they saying bye, or like,
oh, maybe that was it.
Because I think that's the only way I could justify why they would all travel out there.
Yeah. Cause they were talking about the trip.
And then go back into
the
city to then like go out.
Right.
But
Justin had this really snippy line to to Michael.
I don't think it was snippy. I think it was really good advice.
He says, hold out for a Rolex. And Michael looked petrified by that line. Love that. Justin,
imagine what
really,
you have to do to get a Rolex.
Oh, well. Justin's yeah. really coming into his own and really finding himself. And he's getting to be a more mature gay man now that he turned 18.
It's amazing what happens when you become, you know, legal.
Yeah. So they get in the Jeep. They zoom down to Liberty Avenue, and then they park the Jeep and put some money in the meter and start hoofing it up Liberty Avenue towards Woody's. And here comes Chris Hobbs, incredibly, walking down Liberty Avenue, which I didn't get why they would be there in the first place.
Well, so what I liked about this scene is that Justin sees this, and he sees it as... this person who hates who we are is infringing on what is our safe place.
But why would he go there, though?
Well, he says it to Justin. He wanted to check out the freaks.
But that doesn't make any sense.
Why not?
The straight guy doesn't get his bros together and go down there. Well, maybe he does if they want to get into it and mix it up.
Yeah, exactly. He wanted to be intimidating. He wanted to announce his presence.
Do you think he was looking for Justin? Is that the hidden theme of why he and his bros showed up there?
I would not be surprised if that was a thing. But Justin wastes no time in standing up to him and saying, you don't belong here.
I gave you a hand job.
Well, before that, you know, Chris Hobbs starts to act threatening towards Justin again. And Justin, knowing that he has more agency, he has more power on Liberty Avenue, says, hey, everyone. And he just announces to the whole street and to anyone who's listening, this is Chris Hobbs. He just called me a faggot.
Yeah. And everybody in the background's like, ooh.
Like, yes. And he announces that I jerked him off.
Ted looks terrified as Justin's delivering those lines. He's off into the corner of the shot and he just looks frightened.
But Emmett's like, get her, Jade. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah. Emmett's all for it because, you know, Emmett doesn't stand for anything like that. Ted's more kind of like, ooh, don't stir up the pot here.
With Justin standing up to Chris Hobbs the way he did, Chris Hobbs throws out one last, you're fucked, and runs off.
By himself, and the bros leave him behind, because at that point, all the bros know that...
he got a hand, Jay.
Yeah.
From Justin.
Yeah, cute little Justin in the equipment
who knows
room.
What he's doing. There's a lot of encouragement happening for Justin. Even Emmett says, you go, boy. And I was like, it was a very sweet moment that shows that Justin's community has his back.
When Justin's in that situation, he's got... his protective blanket around him, and I think he takes more chances than he really should. And Brian, being the wise one, says,
congratulations. You just made yourself a real enemy.
Which was very prescient of the time, because Brian, being old enough and wise enough, knows that this guy isn't going to go quietly. Something more is going to happen here. It was a really scary ending to the scene.
Yeah, because we have the camera is keeping it on Justin's face, who like still shows hints of he's proud that he stood up to a bigot and that he held his ground and he was able to win this battle. But with Brian's comments, we then see the seeds of doubt on his face.
Yeah.
And it put him in a place of real conflict. And it was
almost like, what did I just do?
It was like a smart cliffhanger that was much more subtle than previous episodes as he goes into Woody's.
Great music under it, too. It was an older song by Gang of Four called I Parade Myself. The music that we're seeing in a lot of these episodes is really interesting. It's not the gay hit parade. There's punk, there's Britpop, there's hardcore songs. It's a really interesting mix of music, and it's unfortunate that it's all been polluted these days. I almost feel like I want to stop even talking about what they do to it, but I know that a lot of our listeners are... watching Queer as Folk on Netflix or Showtime, and
we're sorry.
Yeah, just go buy the episodes on DVD off Amazon. They're like $10, brand new. So you get all the original music in all of its glory, and it's great. This is where the scene ends. I Parade Myself as playing, fades out. We're left not knowing entirely what's going to happen next. We sense that there's some darkness that's headed this way. It was a great ending to the show. So our question that we ask at the end of each one is, does this episode still hold up? It's been 17 years since this aired on Showtime. So I'm going to say that this one mostly holds up, except for that classroom scene. I think that seems rarer these days to come across a homophobic teacher to that level. I think they're weeded out pretty quickly. Nevertheless, it could still be going on here and there. It just seems a little unusual that a teacher would be that direct and that cutting with the student and be able to get away with it for a very long time. I think that the money imbalance between Michael and Dr. David still holds up. That's something that we can still see all the time. So I'm kind of a soft yes, this episode holds up, mostly because I can't really pick out anything that is so glaringly not available in 2017, 2018. What do you think, Matt?
While I found that the real relationship drama between Michael and Dr. David Cameron, as you mentioned, it rang true, and it's still very much an issue in any relationship that's gone into the long term, I felt like the episode didn't hold up, mainly for the issues of the bigotry that Justin was experiencing in the school from not just his peers, but from his teacher that was so blatant. I feel that schools now are opening themselves to be much more accepting, that teachers are being taught to be more accepting, and that they should be more accepting of their queer students. I feel like that is a trend that has continued to grow. Even when I was in high school back in, from 2003 to 2007, so not too long after these episodes were airing, I found that we were in a much more accepting place from our teachers. So that part, I would say, doesn't hold up. I will say that the misogyny that we saw employed during the Dyke Night is definitely not something that would hold up today.
Oh, I think it does. I think it definitely holds up.
I
think it definitely happens.
It definitely happens, and that Emmett and Ted wouldn't get away with talking like that. Like, someone would have heard that and someone would have shut them down.
Well, I don't know.
That's where I think we are today, is that people aren't standing for that anymore.
I think a lot of people might, though. It's especially, like in Boys Town where we live, there's like the whole anti-bachelorette movement.
That is a different realm than than someone who is, again, part of the queer community. When you hear about the bachelorette parties that are usually straight women who are coming into the gay bars, who are thinking that they can lash themselves onto gay men as some sort of accessory, that's one thing. But I'm talking specifically those who are also part of the queer community that are women that can have that kind of talk that Emmett and Ted were employing used against them in some way, to make them feel like they are less than. That's a problem. There's also the issue of the arranged marriage. I mean, now that gay marriage is or marriage equality is completely legal, we wouldn't see Lindsay having to do this for a fellow teacher who is from out of the country, who is looking for his green card.
Guillaume
would be able to find a nice Brian-like figure for his own. I'm going to go ahead and say that this was a no for me.
Okay. This was our read on episode 16, French Fried.
Next week, we'll dig into the next episode entitled Solution, How TLFKAM Got Her Name Back.
Do you know what that stands for?
I have no idea.
I think it stands for the lesbian formerly known as Melanie. I think that's what it's called. So I think the next episode is called Solution - How the Lesbian Formerly Known as Melanie Got Her Name Back. So until then, I'm Patrick Randall.
I'm Matt Dominguez.
Roll the outro. Thanks for listening. Leave a like, share with a friend, and subscribe so you don't miss our next episode. Still, Queer as Folk was written and performed by Patrick Randall and Matt Dominguez. Made with love in Chicago.
Hey, Todd, how's it going?
Fine.